All right, Susana Mendoza has just jumped into the studio with us, and she would like to be the next mayor of the city of Chicago. And we were talking about this, Susana, before you got here.
Do I need to wear these?
Yeah. Well, it's your headphones. You can do whatever you'd like. Okay. But in case, take a phone call or two here, 312-91-7200. All right. Obviously, the story today in City Hall is all about Danny Solis wearing the wire, and we know what was that all about, and he, if he wore it on and off for the past 2 years, who was caught up in it? It's what is this Burke stuff really going to look like at the end of the day? Are there other people in the city council that are going to get wrapped up in this, or other politicians? Mm-hmm. Now, your office says that you are going to be returning $142,000 in donations you received that are connected to Danny Solis or his sister, right?
No, actually, I haven't received any contributions from his sister, but I did over the years from Alderman Solis. You know,
okay.
It's common for colleagues to support each other, and he supported me back in, I want to say, like 2000, and then many years later in 2000, I want to say like 16 maybe, when I ran for controller, and then most recently this last time when I ran for controller.
Okay, so this is not accurately reported that his sister's
company. Well, his sister was going to have a fundraiser for you next week, but there was a cancellation.
Exactly. Well, her father-in-law died, and then now we're just not moving forward with it. But and I also returned contributions dealing from one of the other individuals that had been mentioned in this story with, like, the Vendor Assistance Program, which is actually a program that has been at the back of the line of payments from the controller's office. They actually even thought about litigating against me because I only prioritized the most vulnerable people in the state during the budget crisis. But
well, the question, though, that comes from this is that why would you give back the Danny Solis money if he wore the wire and has not been named in this?
Well, I mean, in the morning, we didn't know what was happening, right? We heard about the wire, and when I was asked if I was going to return any contributions related to them, because, of course, your opposition is pounding away at, mm-hmm. Oh, she should return the contributions, right? And I said, well, we don't even know what this story's about, and if he hasn't been accused of any wrongdoing, or if there is additional information that comes up throughout the day, I would, of course, do them. I mean, I don't... My integrity is worth more than whatever dollar sign is in play, right?
Okay,
right?
But so, I want to take it out of the way from the dollars for a second here, because what the conversation has become here, which is really one that, as Chicagoans, as Anna and I lived our whole lives in the city, that we take this very personally. When you've got aldermen publicly stating that, you know, the going after Danny Solis for wearing a wire, for being a contributor.
That was terrible.
To this,
I mean, this is
right?
Like the sickest thing I saw yesterday. Of everything that happened, as bad as it is to like have another corruption case that pops up,
mm-hmm.
that paints every elected official, by the way, with the same broad brush, and
right.
That's not fair, but it's the reaction that people get, and justifiably so. But the sickest thing that I saw wasn't even, like, as bad as it was to hear another story of the corruption, was that there were aldermen who actually said things like, you know, in my neighborhood, you'd get your butt kicked if you wear a wire, or how dare he, like, turn his back on his family. Like, talk about a code of silence
right.
in the city council. That's what needs to change. And so that was worse than almost the original story, which was that here's another example of a black eye for the city of Chicago. And frankly, look, those are actions that are being alleged against him. They have nothing to do with me. And I'm not going to allow any prior contributions that one of the most powerful and well-respected at the time aldermen had given to me. And I also remember, I used to represent the southwest side of the city of Chicago. I mean, a lot of those aldermen were the aldermen that I was supposed to be collaborating with and working with professionally. But that doesn't mean that I would ever condone illegal behavior or wrong behavior on their part. I don't. And that's why I was really happy today. As a matter of fact, it was, I would say, out of bad came really good. I was able to donate $141,550 to the Marines out on, you know, Montford Point Marines, who were on the verge of losing their chapter, some of the first World War II African-American veterans in Inglewood, and they needed $75,000 plus $100,000. And I heard about it from the Sun-Times, but, you know, hey, I'm happy that this happened at the end of the day, because we were able to save them. That's great.
Right. That's that was the VFW hall, right? In Englewood. That's a gigantic. I was going to do a fundraiser for them this year as well.
Well, so just meet. They're still short $29,000, Rose. So you can hook it up for them.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. Hey, but I want to go back to this more general issue, which is corruption, public corruption in Chicago.
Yep.
been, you know, we're all from here. We've grown up. We've watched all these aldermen come and go, right? We've seen Operation Silver Shovel and all the rest of them. And now whatever this is going to be, Operation Whopper, is what...
we've named it that. Just a working title.
Yeah. And it's a big... This is going to be a big deal. I think a lot of chips are going to fall on this. What would you do if you were elected mayor to ensure that the people of the city council and people in your office would be doing the right thing?
Well, number one, put forth a massive ethics reform package. I mean, and the thing is, you know, we've done ethics reforms in the past. I did them when I was in the legislature. The mayor's done some here. But one of the biggest issues that I think really needs to change is aldermanic prerogative. You know, it's something that the aldermen protect their fiefdom with all of their power. And so
they have
this
a lot of power.
They do. They have so much power. And that obviously kind of breeds corruption, right? It becomes an issue where you see some of the allegations in this current situation with the chair of the zoning committee, which is Alderman Solis, or with the chair of the finance committee, which is Alderman Burke, that, you know, they slow people's permits or their zoning reclassifications, or, and there's all this potential.
You want to
for
open up a business
and,
in a community.
Yeah.
You
or build a building or do something.
And they're the
like that.
Only person that can make or break a business being able to function, right? Or someone being able to convert their two flat into a three flat or whatever it may be. Like the alderman can wreak. They can be very helpful, and they could be horrendously terrible to businesses who may not potentially be seeing eye to eye with the alderman. That needs to stop. And it also would be a better thing for the city as a whole, because then you'd be planning things that help the city. For example, transportation. Transportation impacts the entire city of Chicago. It doesn't just impact ward by ward. Mm-hmm. And when these aldermen can stop projects from moving forward because they're concerned about their little fiefdom, or they might have a beef with the mayor, you're not thinking about overall citywide planning that could really connect the whole city to each other. So there's a whole lot of reasons why aldermanic prerogative has to become a thing of the past. Now, the problem is that some of this aldermanic prerogative is written into the statute. So unless if these guys vote themselves out of their own power,
right,
it's not going to happen. But a lot of it is done by tradition, kind of like it's just like a thing that's been honored in the past. Those days are over. When I get elected mayor,
how do you do that?
Take it away. We're going to stop the tradition of giving the aldermen this like super massive, overwhelming power
there's
that frankly they have not wielded responsibly.
There's no limit to the amount of money someone can give someone running for alderman.
No, there is.
Right.
There are limits. So it depends if you're a contractor or doing business with the state or plan. I mean, not the state, with the city, or plan to do business with the city within this year. Like you can only donate a maximum of $1,500.
But if,
they
but
get
if I'm
it,
if I'm a
know,
guy if I'm somebody
it.
Who has no business with the city, and I want to and I like my alderman, I can give them $500,000.
Essentially, yes. Right.
Yeah, that's tough.
By the way, I'm not giving it to you. If he's listening right now, you're not getting it.
You're going to get a phone call when you get off the air.
I'm using this as a point of a teaching
right.
moment.
Speaking of millions, though, let's talk about, you know, we've had, there are some real honest conversations that have to be had, and the next mayor is going to inherit some financial difficulty, the $300 million unfunded pension payment that'll be due shortly after this person takes office, and then another one in a couple years after that. We had Bill Daley on, one of your opponents in the race, and he said something kind of surprising. He said, I don't care what anybody else says who's running for mayor, but if you tax marijuana, you build a casino, you borrow more money, you still aren't being honest unless you say you've got to reform the pension system. And he even went as far as to say amend the Constitution. Do you agree with that?
No, and he should actually know what the law says before he makes a statement like that, because of course we have major challenges, but you know, that's just pandering. And again, and he's done it time and time again on issues like you know, renaming the highway for Obama. Like, people are dying every single day in this city. We've got bigger issues to talk about than dumb stuff like that. But let's just be honest. The issue of amending the Constitution, there is too much. Like, there's an overwhelming amount of Supreme Court decisions already that you cannot diminish or impair existing benefits. Now, you could do it moving forward. So let's say even if you did change the Constitution, moving forward, you could do that. You could, like, say we're getting rid of the 3% COLAs or whatever it may be.
Right. It would require a constitutional convention. We've already done that.
And the point is, we've already even done that. Like, in the legislature, we passed a tier 2, we passed a tier 3. So the rules for new employees are very different than the ones that are grandfathered in, which is where the bulk of that unfunded pension liability obligation rests. So even if they did change the Constitution, it still does nothing to help pay down the current unfunded pension liabilities,
so
which are about $150 billion in the state
yeah.
and $28 billion in the city.
Crazy high.
So, like, there's some of those other things that he talked about, which is true, like casino, right, which I would support, and the downtown marijuana legalization, and even a progressive income tax, those are going to be important revenue streams, but they're going to take a while to get to. So the bonding deal, which has been very, you know, I would say a little bit controversial because no one knows what it entails. I think that's the biggest issue with the bonding deal is that nobody could responsibly say that we should do it without knowing how it would play out and what the pros and the cons and the risks involved are. But look, I've got experience dealing with bonding deals. I'm the one who championed the bonding deal for the state of Illinois that saved taxpayers between $4 and $6 billion because we were paying 12% interest where we could pay 3.5%. So you've got to look at this and say, what's the fastest way to be able to address the 300 to 400 unfunded pension liability that is around the corner that has right. to be paid? You can't wait for marijuana revenues to come in. You can't wait for a new casino. You can't wait for you know, a progressive income tax. You need cash now, and a bond opportunity might make sense, but the thing is we have to be transparent about it. People hate these bond deals because in the past, the city of Chicago has always done them behind the scenes, behind closed doors, with just a handful of people, and then they drop a huge bond deal on aldermen's desks the day that they're supposed to vote.
But it's also not a long-term solution, though.
No, of course not. It's not a long-term solution, and that's why I think Mayor Emanuel had talked about a $10 billion bond deal. I would say that's probably way too overly aggressive, but we should be looking at, you know, 2 to 3 different options and then rolling them out and talking to the public about them the way I did when I was, you know, controller, talking about the bond deal and saying, well, here's what's going to happen if we don't do anything, right? There's no other revenue sources, unless if people know right now where we can get an immediate infusion of $200 to $400 million. And I haven't found that rock where that money's at yet. We have to be realistic that these are bad decisions. It's which is the least of the bad decisions, right? But do we bond out $2 billion? Do we bond out to get that additional revenue? Or do we bond out 4 or 6? Or what's the magic number that limits our risk financially but gives us the front-end revenues that we have? Because if we end up going into a recession on top of not being able to make those pension payments, we're going to be in way worse shape than if we did incur some additional hard debt service. As long as we can absorb it, you know, I think that's something that we have to talk very candidly with the public, because the only other alternative then for a quick influx of money would be property tax increases, which I am not in favor of. Mm-hmm. So I just think we have to have the honest discussion with the public as to what those revenue tools are, what those options are, walk them through different scenarios where we can maybe, you know, get enough money to get us through this next immediate payment and limit the risk in the process and still be able to absorb the additional debt service.
I got about a minute left. Speaking of marijuana, today Kim Fox, the state's attorney, says that she would expunge the records of marijuana convicts that misdemeanor convicts. Convictions, I should say, not convicts. But what's your position on that?
I mean, look, we're going to legalize marijuana, and nobody should be in jail or be ineligible to get a job and get their life back on track because they smoke some weed.
Or
when we're
going to
be making
though.
It.
But what
well,
about
I mean, I guess it would depend,
possession
right? I mean, if you're like if you're delivering, you know, kilos and kilos of marijuana, you probably would look at that differently than somebody who is
probably involved,
you know,
in other stuff,
selling some stuff, right? Yeah. But nonviolent offenses, drug offenses, especially with a drug that we're on the verge of probably moving to legalize, totally needs to be revisited. We need to get people back to work. We need to, you know, reinvest in human capital and give people an opportunity to clean up their lives.
Susana Mendoza, what's your website?
It's SusanaMendoza.com. Check it out. And we've got our future.
It's Susan with an A.
Yes, it is. It's not silent.
And there's one S. Susanna.
It's S-U-S-A-N-A.
Susanna.
Mendoza.
Mendoza.com. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate
so
you being here.
Great being here. Thanks.